Hey, everybody, happy Saturday. No advertisers in this episode. It is brought to you by Turning Point USA, tpusa.com. Turning Point USA is the flagship of the conservative movement. And get involved today. My conversation on campus with Candace Owens at The Ohio State University, one of the largest campus events we've ever done in Turning Point USA history. And again, get involved with Turning Point USA on the front lines, high school chapter, college chapter, TPUSA Faith. Get involved with Blexit. All of it at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. It's good to be back. It's good to be back. And that guy, I mean, I felt badly. He didn't even wait for us to get on stage before he started protesting. I was like, he missed his big chance. We weren't even up here.
Patience. I mean, you can heckle me all you want. You heckled a Turning Point USA chapter leader. I mean, that's just cruel. I mean, here they're trying to run a nice event. You can say whatever you want to us.
Yeah,
we
don't care. I just felt like, man, he could have just waited 5 minutes and he would have had us and he could have made fun of us. But
they said whatever they wanted.
Those gender studies majors, man, they're just...
So Candace, I can't remember. Did we do this event together?
We did. I think we did Ohio State together a few years ago. I absolutely remember being on stage with you here. Or maybe I was alone. Maybe it was Brandon Tatum. You guys look exactly alike, obviously. So
I get that all the time, by the way, that Brandon Tatum and I look exactly alike. But it's kind of fun going back to some of these campuses a couple years later. And Candace, you were at LSU last night for the... tied for the largest campus event ever, because this one I think ties the record, actually. It's standing room only. We had to turn away hundreds of students, which is a good thing, but it's also, you know, it's a good thing because there's so much interest. We wish we could have everyone here, but also shows there's a lot more conservatives on college campuses than they would ever admit or acknowledge.
I think it's one of those things that it's always so good to plug in and do college campuses because, you know, I have my podcast and you have your radio show and you talk every day about issues and you just think, what's happening to this country? But then we see these results. Like when we first started doing campus tours and, you know, we were doing our bit, there weren't this many students. There just weren't this many conservatives in the audience. And so it's incredible to me. I mean, I was not one of you when I was in college. I was a liberal. And so it's incredible to me to see that not just that there are conservatives, but there are conservatives that are proud enough to be conservatives, to be seen and to say, yeah, I'm one of those people that actually likes our country, likes American principles, likes American values. And I'm going to say that loudly. So just commending everybody in this room. Now, I want to ask a question before we get started. Two questions, actually, that I always ask before we get started. First question is, and I'm asking you not to make fun of you. I actually think it's awesome if you are here. Raise your hand if you're here and you actually fundamentally disagree with a lot of what me and Charlie Kirk say. That's awesome. Give these people a round of applause. I do. I think it's super awesome. It's very difficult, especially because I always express to people the college environment is so different from when I was in school. When I was in school and I was a liberal, this is 13 years ago, my friends were conservatives. Conservatives and liberals were allowed to be friends. It was never toxic. There wasn't a single protest on campus, whether a Democrat or a Republican spoke. It was just, okay, if you want to go hear them speak, you can hear them speak. So much has shifted over just 13 short years, and it's become so hostile, and it shouldn't be that way. So I do want to commend you guys if you're here to say, actually, I don't agree with these people, but I want to hear what they actually think rather than having the media spin to you what we think. Because if you've read my Wikipedia page, which is very clear, I am not actually a homophobic, racist, sexist, misogynist, self-hating black person woman who wants puppies and pit bulls to die, which is what I think it currently says at this moment.
The latest one on mine is that I hate Christians, which is very interesting. It's we're both self-haters, Candace, right, in our own way. But I agree with you. People that are here that disagree, it's interesting and it's important because for conservatives, you have to hear things you disagree every single day when you go to class. And so it's nice for liberals to actually hear the opposing worldview. Candace, what has changed in the last couple of years that we've done these campus events
I get a sense that the trans thing is completely out of control. It was an element of our campus talks a couple years ago, but now there's a militancy, there's a tyranny behind the trans thing. And then when you were in college, you were telling a great story last night at LSU about somebody who tried to tell you to always blame men for your problems. Was the trans thing even an issue back then? I mean, there was at least a belief that, I mean, as disturbing as the story was, at least they believed there was men and women.
Right. It's unfathomable, honestly. I promise you, I say this, if you got into a time machine and you went back just two decades ago in America, if you said, I am from the future and in 20 years, men will be able to be women and women will be able to be men and there will be 26,000 genders, people would have thought you were on crack cocaine. They would have probably put you on a psych 5150 holds. The debates that we're having today are unimaginable 20 years ago. I always tell people I miss the 90s. Everyone was happy. We were wearing overalls. I mean, we were watching the Winslows. Good,
Seinfeld,
no good family. Family was, yeah, the nuclear family was being presented. And so wokeism has destroyed so much and it's further divided people. But some of these things, it's difficult to even comprehend that you would be selling to children an idea, such a dangerous ideology. And this is one that I'm super passionate about and I've always been passionate about, but I'm especially passionate about because I'm a mother. And to think that there is an environment right now where institutions are taking advantage of children and trying to convince them that they can attain something that is an impossibility, right? Impossibility. You can change your appearances. I could dye my hair pink. I can shave my head bald. I will never be a man. You will never be a woman. It really is that simple. And yet kids are going on to drugs like Lupron, which are used to chemically castrate pedophiles that are in prison. These are the same drugs to block your puberty, fundamentally transforming your entire livelihood, because when you grow up, you just can't get that back.
In fact, the criminal justice advocates have sued to stop allowing Lupron to be administered in prisons because they say it's too inhumane, but they want to give it to 12 or 13-year-olds. But Candace, what is the driver here? Is the driver a social contagion via TikTok? Is the driver, you know, the pharmaceutical companies that are going to make billions of dollars off of doing this? If you look at a map of pediatric gender reassignment clinics in America, there were two 15 years ago. Now there are hundreds. There's over 600 across the country. There's a supply issue and a demand issue. Where is this coming from? And why are we putting up with 11-year-olds getting hysterectomies?
I would say there's two elements of this. The first, you accurately defined social contagion. Of course, we are the generation of social media. When I grew up, there was no social media. That sounds so crazy. People are like, what do you mean? What did you do? I don't know. We spoke to each other. We played outside. Wild. I know. But there was no social media. And I thank God that I was born in a time where we were able to live in reality and not in fiction, where people are creating avatars of themselves and where people are essentially doing more and more extreme things for attention. And this is a huge part of this. I unpack this on my podcast, how psychiatrists were talking about seeing people that didn't actually have the disorders that they claimed to have, but they were mimicking the disorders because it gave them a sense of community online, right? They called these pseudo disorders, right? So rather than the real thing, like years ago, you would actually have a person that suffered from gender dysphoria, which was legally, when I was growing up, we learned about it in the DSM-5 as a mental disorder. Now you're seeing kids that just think it's cool. They're watching Dylan Mulvaney on TikTok and they go, I want to identify with this community. So they're pretending to be trans because it gets them an instant community. And ultimately what we're talking about is a spiritual emptiness, right? Kids have never, we call it social media. It's actually the most antisocial thing in the entire world to hold up your phone and talk to yourself, right? And kids are spending more and more time getting a dopamine kick from likes, and they don't know. When they're done getting that like, they need to feel that high again. It's quite literally a drug. And so an element of that is that we have a generation of children that are addicted to the drug that social media has become, that can't go back in their memory to a time when it didn't exist. And what we're seeing are symptoms of that. People that just literally want attention, need a hug, need spiritual fulfillment, and they're never, ever, ever going to get it by being more extreme, by saying you're trans, cis, is that us? I don't know. There's so many terms now. It's weird. What is cis?
Cis? I think we're cis.
Are we cis?
We're cis.
Okay.
Cisgender.
Do we call each other like cis?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well,
no, but
I can't learn.
I think cisgender
what's
is.
What's zer?
What is zer?
What is zer?
I think that is, those are pronouns for low IQ people.
Okay.
That are too afraid to engage in reality. Z and Zer and Zim and
Yeah, and Zay. Zimin. What is that?
Though those are, that's what I, the pronouns that people put in their email signature. Whenever I see pronouns in an email signature, you know what it is? It says, I went to college. I have a lot of student debt. I'm miserable and acknowledge how good of a person I am.
Oh, mine is like, you're not even getting hired. So just delete.
No, I mean, it is the ultimate deterrent not to work at Turning Point USA.
They're saying this now. Forget just Turning Point USA and conservative organizations. I don't remember whether it was the Washington Post, but it was a left-leaning publication that wrote an article saying that people that put their pronouns on their resumes are not getting hired. And I went, gee, I wonder why.
You're going to be the first one to go to the HR department, the first one to
complain.
Why don't
you just write, I'm stupid, on your resume? Yes. It's completely crazy.
Yeah, watch. They're going to file some sort of discrimination lawsuit. I mean, is pronoun declaration a protected class? I don't think that's a protected class.
No, it is not a protected class just yet, but it's driving people crazy.
That's an interesting point. I do want to zero in on this, though, because the way that they frame the trans issue is two ways. Protecting children, nonsense. It's child abuse. Mm-hmm. Okay? And the second way is, well, Charlie, why does it bother you? Live and let live. That's not the question. The question is, why are you making me say something I know that is not true? It is inherently tyrannical. It's not about living and let live. It's not about you being in your home, dressing the way you want to dress. No. It's you making me acknowledge something that is an insult and a middle finger to reality.
It's so weird, right? You're exactly right. I always say that I am okay if you want to be crazy, but stop requiring the rest of us to be crazy to accommodate your crazy, right? If I said, like, here's my invisible friend, her name's Teresa, everybody say hi to Teresa. It's a little weird, you know, it gets a little weird. And then you start saying, if you don't say hi to Teresa, and if you don't see Teresa sitting on the stage with me, then you're a bigot. You're like, what? This is where we're at right now in society. It's completely made up. It's completely fictional. And yet they have so much power to go around to call people bigots and to call people transphobes, because we can obviously, we have two eyes. We can see that it isn't so. A man will never be able to give birth. A man will never be able to menstruate. When did this become controversial?
Well, and it's tragic that we have to say that and get applause.
Yeah, I know. It's so sad.
We should say that. You guys should be like wow.
Why are we here? 1 + 1 = 2. Really amazing stuff, right? I mean, but it's...
No, I mean, a couple years ago, if we would have said that on campus, we would have been like...
Yeah, I'd be like, why are we here?
See you next time. Got it. But now it's like, yeah!
Woo!
They can't give birth!
Common sense is so... It's so true. I say this. I shouldn't even really... It boggles my mind to sit back and to reflect and think that I even have a platform, because I haven't said anything like this isn't Einstein breaking to say. All I said was, oh, black people don't have to be Democrats. And they were like, like the whole world just crumbled. And they were how dare she say something?
This is critical, though. It's the simple truth that drives them the most crazy. It's because they live in abstractions. They can't actually ever say something that the plumber, the electrician, the police officer, the firefighter, the person that didn't go to Harvard can understand. They have to say, well, you know, according to postmodern theory and the book by Herbert Marcuse, like, actually, yeah, you're a racist and a bigot.
No, Charlie, this is not a joke. You guys can check this. You're not even going to believe me, but I promise you this is real. So apparently, if you have an organized pantry or a clean home, you're racist.
This is a real thing.
It's a real thing now. And I have a very organized pantry. My pantry is hotter than your pantry. I am so proud of it. It took me basically 2 months to organize my pantry. And then I found out because a professor from Loyola University wrote an article explaining that actually if you aspire to organize your closets, it's because you are inherently racist and you don't understand that these social constructs. I mean, how much school do you have to have to be that stupid? How many years of school does it take to be that stupid?
Let's just also call what is. It's blatantly insulting to black people is what that is. If a black person
can't
has
organize
an organized cabinet that they're somehow like rejecting some sort of inclination. Like, you're a bigot if you believe that. If somehow organizing your home is tied to white supremacy, it's very so. Ibram X. Kendi is the Archbishop of the religion of anti-racism, right? And have you seen this the other day?
He's so stupid. It's
well,
incredible.
It's interesting. He's super rich because he goes around. By the
really
way, this
stupid.
Is how you know. For those of you that disagree tonight, here's how you know there's probably something to what Candace and I believe. If you disagree, we'll allow you to the front of the line. You can say whatever you want. Ask any question. 99% of people on the left will never have an open mic at their event because they're afraid of getting cross-examined by somebody that might make them look bad. Okay? Now, this guy, so you saw this clip though. Okay, I got to tell you about it. It's unbelievable. I did a whole thing on it on the show today. So Ibram X. Kendi is asked a question in front of a friendly audience. And someone says, hey, how would you define racism? Asked, what is racism?
He said everything.
Well, you know, that would have been a better answer. Because he said, well, racism is racist activity. And it's like, no, you can't define the word with the word. What are you, like a trans activist now? A woman is someone who identifies as a woman. No, we get that. But it's called circular reasoning. You can't do that. Can you define what the word is? And then he goes, well, it's very simple that racism is the activity of people really being prejudiced and racist. He does it again, the second time. They've never actually had to define the very word that they're restructuring society around, because here's why. If he gave the actual definition of racism, which is one person being bigoted or prejudiced to another person,
he would have defined himself.
He would have all of a sudden self-identified as a bigot.
100%. I mean, it's stunning to me. I always say, if you're wondering whether or not it's racist and you read a headline, just switch the race that they're talking about. And if it's race, if it sounds bad to you, I'll give you an example. During the 2016 election, like the lead up to Trump going to office, BuzzFeed was out of control. I swear it was BuzzFeed. They wrote a headline that said, white people just need to shut up. And I went, I couldn't imagine waking up and reading a headline that just said, black people need to just shut up. It would be absurd. It's unimaginable. You would go, this would never exist. They would burn down BuzzFeed. They would be protesters out there tomorrow. Literally, they would burn down BuzzFeed. And yet, it was totally fine to be openly and flagrantly racist toward white people. Like, especially after George Floyd, you could say anything about a white person. You could threaten to kill white people. And people don't understand. They go, reverse racism doesn't exist. You're correct. Reverse racism does not exist. It's just racism. Okay.
And it's in our college admissions.
Yeah.
It's in affirmative action, college admissions, hiring practice. Robin DiAngelo, who wrote White Fragility, which I hope none of you ever have to read in college, she came out the other day and she said,
saw this.
Yeah, it's time for black people to separate themselves from white people.
Segregation. I'm pretty sure that's called segregation. And she said, I just think black people need to just separate themselves from white people. And you're seeing this also, and I hope this is not one of the universities, in having segregated graduations. I mean,
and dormitories.
How can you have somebody repurpose? How have we learned no lessons from the past? And here's the truth. If you're wondering where every bad societal idea comes from, it's the academia. It's why I advise, if you are in school, take time to learn and to read the works of Thomas Sowell, who quite literally did one of the most brilliant things ever. He has a PhD in economics. He attended Columbia University to receive his master's, and then he went on to get his PhD from Harvard. And the reason why he went to these schools, is he writes in his book, he says, I went to these schools so that I can look people in the eye that went to these schools and say, you know nothing, right? Your degree means nothing. It's meaningless. But he writes extensively about every bad idea that's ever happened in society, and he says it was always the academics who came up with it. Jim Crow, eugenics, Planned Parenthood, everything that we're fighting and we look back on and we go, oh my God, this is so terrible. It was written up by a professor. These were their brilliant ideas. Madison Grant, Columbian Yale graduate who wrote what was the most successful book at that time in the progressive era, The Passing of the Great Race. It was quite literally an argument that minorities should not procreate, that the Nordic race needed to be protected. It was an argument that people that lived in Southern and Eastern Europe that were coming over at the time, the immigrants, were going to dumb down the supreme white race. This book was read by, and it was hailed as a Bible by Adolf Hitler. It was the progressives and the university professors in America that inspired Adolf Hitler. They don't want you to know this, because the best part about being an academic is never having to say you're wrong. They were the ones that were writing about all these crazy COVID policies. Let your family die. Go back and research any moment in time that you think is the most egregious in American history, and I'll show you the professor that wrote the policies and got in lockstep with the government to produce them. And this is one of the dangers of the academia, because what's happening is people are coming out with an inflated sense of arrogance. I mean, the number one things that were said to me and Charlie when we started was, you don't have a degree. Oh, okay. Does that make you more powerful? Literally, people that are less successful than us, that are older than us, okay, would look at us and say, well, you don't have a degree, so I shouldn't have to listen to you. Okay, well, you don't have any success, so why the hell should I have to listen to you? It's crazy. It's one of the craziest things. I want to add to that, Charlie. Sorry, I'm really on a rant about the academia, because it's something, and I appreciate the irony of the crowd in front of me. But I want you to know this, and that it means never having to say you're sorry. And it's so dangerous. What really happens when you look at the world right now in America, and this is a fact, We have never produced students that have graduated with lower IQs. It is a fact that since the establishment of the Department of Education, the collective IQ is going down in America. Okay? So they federalized the education system and we're getting dumber and dumber and dumber. If you go back and you reread the writings of people that had no formal education and were Civil War soldiers, read what they wrote to their parents. It's like poetry. Like the way that they describe what they're seeing when they're writing letters back home. No average American can write like that. I would be challenged to write like that. It's literally poetic. So what has happened? How is it plausible that we've never produced kids with this low of a collective IQ? And yet, at the exact same time, we have never handed out more degrees in American society. Does that make sense? Can we chart that? How are we, kids are getting dumber, but they're getting more degrees. And why is that happening? Well, because the government understands that to give you a degree is to give you an inflated sense of ego, right? How stupid to think that you should spend 4 years and $100,000 to receive a degree in gender studies. You know how dumb that is? You know how dumb that is? You get out into the real world, and what happens is you realize that nobody in the history of the world, anywhere at any time ever, said, quick, get me a gender studies major. I really need a gender studies major to help me in this predicament. It's never happened. So these kids spend all of their time getting these degrees, 4 years, $20,000 that they get into the world and they get punched in the face by free markets and capitalism. They realize nobody wants them. And then they turn around and they meet these kids that didn't go to college, right? That didn't acquire any debt, that jumped right into the workforce, that have real skills and can work with their hands. And they realize, hey, wait a second, Johnny that I went to high school with and has no debt is now running a business where he fixes ACs and he's cleaning up and he's making millions a year. How is that possible? Because let me tell you, everybody at some point in their life, especially if they live in the South, has said, please, for the love of God in the summertime, I will pay you anything to fix my air conditioner, right? And then that person who graduated becomes bitter and angry because how on earth could someone like Candace Owens and Charlie Kirk, who didn't go and get a degree from whatever university you think is so sparkly, I went to an Ivy League school, says Sam Harris. How could Candace Owens and Charlie Kirk get something right and not me? No one should listen to them. And then they become, as Thomas Sowell warns, very dangerous. He says there is nothing like an academic scorned. And when they start to realize, it's so true. There's nothing like an academic scorned. And then they start to have really dangerous ideas. And they start to say, we need to fix this. And they come up with radical ideas. We need to steal more from the rich. We need to punish the successful more. Lock down the mom and pop shops. The people that come up with those ideas are dangerous academics who realize that everything that they think they know does not apply when it comes to the free markets. I just wanted to let you guys know that.
The entire progressive movement was started by a council of academics. Woodrow Wilson was a college president of Princeton University and then became governor of New Jersey and then president in 1912. And he really started this kind of progressive era where he was the first American president where he said, the American founders got it wrong. We're in a new era. He said, we have industrial might. We don't need this life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. We don't need this promise of the founding. We're a new man. And that's something that is laced in your education here that academics push, which is that now we're in the modern era. We no longer need the thinkers, the traditions, the patterns, or the customs of what came before. And if you look very carefully in your class, you'll pick up on this now. There's an embedded bias towards modernity. Basically like, well, we have Twitter, we have airplanes, we have Advil, therefore we're smarter than Thomas Jefferson. I think people put way too much trust in progress, way too much trust. And in fact, I think human beings don't change regardless of the technology around us. In fact, it actually makes our broken nature more likely to screw up. Technology is an amplifier on our broken nature. In fact, if we raise bad people that are devoid of wisdom and we give them super weapons called smartphones and they don't know why they're on this earth or their purpose or their meaning, then they're going to be the most suicidal generation in history, which is exactly what's happening right now. And so this has happened for a variety of reasons. One of the things we stand for as conservatives, if there's just one thing you remember I say tonight, it's that we probably have a lot to learn from the last 2,000 years of history and radically redefining it, swooping in with tyrannical force, with godlike authority to try to remake man and woman, to try to have war on nature, as if we have figured it out in 2023, is not just prideful, it's stupid and it's dangerous. And it's driven by academics that have never lived in the real world, people that have PhDs and wrote dissertations, and they could not fix a sink if their life depended on it. And these are the people that are screwing up our entire society.
That is so true. And you know what? One of the things that I've been trying to do is to go backwards, because I realize how just a few short generations ago, how much they knew, how much my grandparents knew. It's everything to me now. I realize how little I know, because the one thing I did was I moved to the South, right? The simple life. You mean being able to take care of yourself and grow your own food? Give me some of that, right? But getting started, right? Getting started and going on this path of wanting to have a garden and learn to grow food and realizing how little I knew. Think about this right now. If we actually all had to rely on ourselves, how much do you really know? It's a very scary concept, and you need to sit and you need to think with that concept, because it stunned me. I sat there in Tennessee and I said, I was talking to people. I had a woman that was helping with the kids. She's got, you know, 15 grandchildren. She's seen everything. She's in her 80s and she knows so much. These are the type of people that liberals with their sipping lattes on the Eastern Coast mock, right? Mock these sorts of people. She looks in, she helps with my garden, she's pulling weeds, she tells me what everything is, she tells me what's poison. Just being able to look and say, that's poison if you eat that. You gotta watch out for these bugs. Do you know what bugs and what birds are in your backyard? Would you be able to hunt? Would you be able to grow your own food? If the answer is no, I'm going to shock you by telling you that you are in fact also on welfare, because food does not grow in a grocery store. I have completely transformed my life. I want to be like the people that when I was raised and when I was coming up in school, I was told they know nothing. If you think, and I call that woman Grandma Helen because she's been such a gift to me in helping me to learn everything and to be able to work with my hands. If you think people like Sam Harris and people that write for the Huffington Post know more than Grandma Helen in Tennessee, you are confused. Those people know everything. Know what's in your backyard.
Well, and we're in the perfect place for this conversation, Candace, because this state, the state of Ohio, is really, I think, the heartbeat of the muscular class in America. These are the folks that worked with their hands. They pay their taxes. This was once the industrial base of America, but there's a lot of people in touch with the land here. Massive agrarian base, you know, agricultural, really an agricultural beast for the world. And this state, for I mean that in a positive way. And this state for many decades, though, was the victim of snooty, elitist, scoffing, coastal, bipartisan neoliberalism, which is we're going to open up our borders, we're going to send jobs overseas, and we don't care about East Palestine, Ohio. We don't care about Hubbard, Ohio. And for a while, it seemed like a good idea. Wow, look at all these cheap products we get from China. But I think in Ohio, one of the reasons why this state has recalibrated itself in a more conservative America first direction is that you realize that, okay, fine, our homes are twice as big as they were in the 1950s, but they're also twice as empty because we're having less kids. And our garages are full of plastic from China that we don't care about. And the local factory is closed and more people are on opioids than ever before. And the people who told us this is a good deal, like Mitt Romney, came in, and he's wealthier than ever, and southeastern Ohio is basically obliterated. But then we're told by the academics, just keep on supporting neoliberalism, keep on sending money to Ukraine, keep on keeping the borders open, and then somehow your life will get happier and better. And the people of Ohio the last couple of years have made an amazing, courageous correction, I think, not just politically, but also not correction, but they've also realized that neoliberalism has destroyed the soul of Ohio. That this open border, massive invade the world, invite the world, import a bunch of foreign products, and it was brought forth by academics that always had contempt for them.
Yeah, they have contempt for family, and it's a thread that I always try to make people realize is a lot of times you can think that what the left is doing is outrageous. It is, and that it's chaotic. It isn't. And a good friend and mentor of mine, Dennis Prager, who was so wonderful and so brilliant, I remember asking him in earnest years ago, sitting across from him, what are they doing? One day they're screaming at bathroom signs. One day they're marching out of school protesting climate change. What the heck are they doing? Like, are they on drugs? And the answer to that is probably yes, but also, he said to me, it's just chaos. You can't understand it. But actually, I spent time thinking about that, and I think it's wrong. And I offer back to him now that they're ever intentional, it's Machiavellian, and it's methodical. And the method behind their madness is that all of these things represent an attack on family. And when you start to see things through that lens and revisit those topics, you will realize that everything they do is to attack family. That is the push for the LGBTQIA all of those initiatives, teaching people to mutilate their bodies, telling people to pursue same-sex couples and same-sex marriages, putting children on drugs that are irreversible. Those people are not going to grow up and to be able to have productive nuclear families. When you look at the climate change lobby, what they are encouraging children in classrooms is saying that it would be irresponsible for you to grow up and start a family. Notoriously, Meghan and Harry received an award for agreeing to only have two kids. It's about the shrinking of family, telling them it's the responsible, the eco-friendly thing to do to either not have a family altogether or to limit how big of a family that you actually have. You look at transgenderism, of course, we touched upon that. Every single topic of the left is after feminism, telling women to act like men, not to be at home, to climb the corporate ladder, telling men to act like women. Everything is an attack on family. And then you start to recast it and you realize, of course, because the thing that stands between the government and complete and utter omnipotence is family, right? If you are the government and you want to be the God and the family in people's life, then there can be no God. Mock Christians, celebrate atheism, celebrate sex culture, celebrate women dancing on stage half naked, display the Kardashians all the time, denigrate women by telling them that you're empowering women, right? Break down the family structure and break down religion, and then you will become the new religion. And the biggest example of that for me, and I still am traumatized for what I saw during COVID, people on their hands and knees begging the government to deliver them one more day. It was an experiment, a human experiment, and we failed.
We failed in a lot of ways, but Candace, you didn't fail. And
no, I didn't fail. I passed with flying colors.
No, but that is correct. And I was against the lockdowns from the beginning, and I was attacked from every possible direction. The lockdowns will go down as one of the worst mistakes in human history.
But academics said that it was going to be great.
Though that goes to the core point right here before we do some questions, which I hope an academic will ask a question, which is the experts. We were told to trust the experts. You see, the problem with trusting the experts is it's not about trusting scientists. It's not science. It's about the scientists they like. Dr. Anthony Fauci did more damage to Generation Z than almost any person. That man should be in prison for the rest of his life. Forcing a gene-altering shot on a generation that is not at a significant risk at all from dying from this virus and kicking kids out of school and kicking them out of the military, it's unconscionable. And not to mention, I mean, I knew we had a problem with modernity when I was driving through Phoenix and I saw people alone in their car wearing masks as if they were going to get COVID through the radio. And people, you know, it's really amazing. I mean, I was at the airport the other day. People still wear masks. And I'm not here to mock you personally. Maybe you have a reason for that. I'd love to learn about that seriously. But most of these are like 17-year-old neurotic young people that have brought, this is really important, they've bought into this kind of cult of death promise that Greta
Religion
Thunberg.
Of government.
Yes, but it's like the world is going to end because of climate change. The world is going to end if I get COVID. Like, actually, you'll probably be fine. You look like you're in shape. Like, you're okay.
It's actually a doomsday cult, the left.
Yes.
They're constantly telling you that you're going to die all the time in various ways. It's a doomsday cult.
And it's why they're so unhappy and why unhappiness is like spreading throughout the country. But I will say this as a reverse, we did fail the test, but despite all the coercion, Candace, despite all the subsidizing, despite all this, 37 million Americans still resisted taking the shot. That's a big deal. There's a remnant.
And I would argue it's probably more because a lot of people faked it, got fake papers, and it's amazing. And there are always going to be Americans that are resilient. And it just makes me happy. I know that sometimes it seems like it's all doom and gloom. But when we see events like this, I'm telling you, it makes me feel elated to really understand that there is a cultural shift happening. And you can tell because the left has never been more angry. And that lets you know that they're losing control of the narrative that so many of us believed, you know, celebrating celebrities, believing in Hollywood culture, wanting to be just like them. And now we resent them. And we realize that the real celebs are in your own household. The real celebs are the fathers that lead their families, the women that raise their children.
They have never controlled more, and they've never been unhappier. They've never had more institutional control, and they've never been more paranoid. If their victory was inevitable, their propaganda would not be necessary. All right, let's do some questions. We can start lining up. All right, so here's the question. Couple rules, everybody, okay? If somebody comes up and says something you find objectionable that you don't like, let them finish their point. We as conservatives don't heckle or interrupt. We invite disagreement. If we wanted heckling and disruption, we'd be outside like the apparatchiks with their flags screaming into the sky.
Second thing I want to say is, guys, please try to keep your questions down to like 10 to 15 seconds because we want to get to as many as possible. And sometimes people just completely go on a little speech here. And not that we don't want to hear everything that you want to say, but we want to get to as many people as possible. So, yeah.
So if you disagree, you're allowed to go to the front of the line
and
tell us what you think. We'll start with the first question. Right here. Let's go.
First of all, thank you for coming. I have a very practical question. What advice would you give to students who feel like their voice or free expression are being oppressed by university administrations or DEI programs?
So one of the first things that I say is that you should fight the administrations. I'm a big believer in that. I literally sell shirts that say Proud Karen because I think we need to bring back shaming people. One of the things that the institutions hate is exposure. They hate people finding out about what they're doing. And it makes them super embarrassed. And you just saw this at Stanford University where they acted like animals when that federal judge came and was invited to speak and wasn't allowed to share a single word. So I would say fight them in a constructive way. Make sure that you report these individuals, that you keep a log of these individuals, network with other people, tag us, tag Turning Point USA so that we can bring these stories to the forefront because the public needs to know. And they hate, what they absolutely hate is attention on the things that they're doing that are discriminatory to students like you.
And I want to just single out you and all of our great leaders. Our Turning Point USA students here deserve a lot of credit for what they have to go through and their leadership. And if you are not currently or actively involved in this chapter at Ohio State, start to get involved. There's strength in numbers. This sends a big statement. It sends a statement to the administration the next time they start to poke around. Like, hey, remember when we had to turn away a couple hundred kids for a conservative event on campus? That gives you all of a sudden a pretty good argument that this is not some sort of fringe ideology. Keep fighting. You are in the minority against the administration. But I will say this, and I say it factually, that from the security here and having this event, Ohio State University has been a lot better to work with than most of the other schools we've had to deal with in the last couple of weeks. So thank you. We got to get to the next question. Thank you.
Hi. Is this good? Oh, sorry. I also want to thank you so much for coming here and being able to speak to so many students and people and general admissions and things like that. And my question is, I definitely agree with the part of simple living and how important it is. But as college students who are kind of involved in anything but that and living in that kind of community where it's anything but simple living, what first steps would you recommend students who want to kind of take that approach as their lifestyle? What are like the first steps to that?
The first thing I would say is to start following people. You guys are big on social media. Start following people that do live that simple lifestyle. Like, I love following Ballerina Farm. She's one person that I think is amazing, left the city and is pursuing a much more simple life. The second thing that I would say is, I joke when I say an apocalyptic mindset, but I don't really joke when I say that, which is to say, what could you do to support yourself? Get involved in activities outside of the university that make you learn to grow your own food, make you learn to work with your hands, make you understand that plants are medicine, not filling in a prescription over at CVS. You know, I don't give my kids medicine. I'm literally a grandma from the 1940s. I put silver on my kids. It's amazing. And I actually understand what's in my cupboard. I know how to use spices to make people feel better. And this is the kind of stuff they want you to believe is backwards and is woodcraft. No, it's stuff that removes power from them and gives power to you. And this is why they speak so badly about it. So that would be my advice to you right off the bat. Thank you so much for your question.
I just have a short thing. Honor the Sabbath. Turn off your phone on Friday night. Turn it back on Sunday morning. If you are here tonight and you are suffering from anxiety, depression, before you take antidepressant medication, try doing the one thing God told you to keep you happy and joyful.
I love that.
Shutting down and resting. Sabbath means stop. Shabbos means stop in the ancient biblical Hebrew. Before you all of a sudden say, I need to see all these different doctors and all this, try resting for one day. Truly resting. No technology, no TV, no social media. You will be a happier person, I guarantee.
I agree.
So earlier, y'all were making a lot of good points about the transgenderism problem, about how that's just so out of touch with reality. So and then coming into this, I was thinking that that's like an important thing we talk about right now. But I think 10, 15 years ago, you could apply that same thing to gay marriage, to birth control. Those things were just not as prevalent as they used to be. So my question for you is, would you treat those things that have contributed to the sexual degeneracy of our colleges, especially fraternities and things like that, would you treat homosexuality, birth control, et cetera, with the same severity that you treat transgenderism?
When you say treat, do you mean talking about it?
Yeah, talking about it, acknowledging.
Yeah, I mean, if anybody follows me, you guys already know like what my stance is. First off, on Big Pharma, you're talking about birth control, the culture of sex, and all the things that women are programmed to believe from the time that we're in high school. The lie that was sold, I talked about Thomas Sowell, making people believe that everybody was having sex in high school. That was actually a Planned Parenthood push to get into the classrooms. The majority of people were actually graduating with their virginity before the 1970s. And the Department of Education pushed to make people think that sex was normal and partying and all those things were normal. I speak a lot about abstaining from partying, and I know it seems totally unattainable, and I definitely didn't do it when I was in school, but I talk about the culture of drinking on my podcast. Obviously, we are both Christians, and you are correct that there is an element of which also explains even how the rates, once we started culturally accepting being gay, that there was this explosion, which is the social contagion element that we're talking about, where people are like, well, I just want to experiment with doing this. And the whole idea of being born gay, well, you can now show that there is a social contagion element, because when you go and you look at other places around the world, it's not the same circumstance. So America is fostering these ideas, and people are making these decisions. These aren't people that are, they believe that they're their own ideas. They believe that it is who they are, but in reality, they're victims of propaganda. And hopefully, I definitely forcefully talk about all of those topics on my podcast.
Yeah, I'll just add one thing. Every young girl needs to know that birth control significantly contributes to depression. It is clinically proven. If you don't believe me, look at the multiple peer-reviewed studies published by Dr. Daniel Amen. You could fact-check me. Over many decades, it shows how the pill contributes to the mental health crisis in America.
Your fertility is a gift. Your school tries to teach you that your fertility is the enemy, that having children is the enemy, that everything is a curse. It is the exact opposite, and I can't even get into. I could spend an entire night, and maybe I will come back and speak to women about the dangers of birth control. But I'll save it for another day. Thank you so much for your question. Hey.
Hi. Thank you for being here tonight. This question is directed to Mr. Kirk. In the Gospel of St. Matthew, our Lord says, "But he that shall scandalize one of these little ones that believeth in me, it were better for him that a millstone should be hanged about his neck and that he should be drowned in the depth of the sea." So here our Lord is talking about moral actions, inclusive of speech that is contrary to Christian morality and the gospel. And he says it ought to be punished and at minimum assigned a social penalty. So we look out today and our society is being degenerated. We're seeing transgenderism, homosexuality, feminism, and other various social evils being promoted. Yet conservatives continually promote this idea of free speech, which is directly allowing these things to flourish and is actually normalizing them. So my question is, as someone that takes the Bible very seriously like yourself, why do you not believe the words of our Lord? Why do we not punish free speech, because it's dragging souls to hell and it's so clearly against a Christian political order?
Well, you're putting words in my mouth, first of all. I think that speech at its highest place should point to virtue. So for example, I would happily use the force of government to prevent drag queen story hour in front of children. Right? So I encourage you not to misrepresent the position of the speaker. Right? But there's a balance. There's a balance between expression, speech, petition against the government, and something that is obviously not speech. So this is where I'm more in the Sohrab Amari camp and not the David French camp. I don't think being able to rent out a library to do predatory sexual behavior to children should be constitutionally protected speech. That's the founding fathers did not have in mind, boy, we need a robust First Amendment so that a bunch of groomers can get in front of eight-year-olds. That is not their idea of speech. With that being said, we have to be obviously careful, because when you start to overly police types of political speech against institutions or organizations, that is what the First Amendment is before. The First Amendment allows you to complain. It allows you to challenge. It allows you to be able to organize people. And I could say that the only reason I'm allowed to speak at University of California, Davis, is they were afraid I was going to sue them
under First Amendment practices. Where I will find agreement, because you cited one of the many times Jesus says in the New Testament about the harsh punishment of going after children, is that any conservative that uses the First Amendment flippantly while children are being abused and groomed, they have no place in the conservative movement whatsoever. And so I just I'll close with that. Thank you. Appreciate it.
What do you think of the Tennessee bill that allows clerks to refuse marriage license based on personal beliefs, particularly gay or interracial marriages? It seems to be a clear method of forcing personal beliefs on relationships that one doesn't agree with, especially non-traditional ones.
I'm sorry, did you say the Tennessee law that...
Yeah, Tennessee law. It allows clerks to refuse issuing marriage license based on personal or religious beliefs.
I actually am not familiar with that bill at all. And so I would love to respond to your question, but I always say I never make a habit of responding to something that I don't have in front of me and I haven't read, because that's how you always get yourself into trouble. So you're characterizing elements of it. It could be longer. It could mean something else. And I genuinely have not read it. So I'm not going to be able to answer that question.
Thank you.
But thank you for the question.
Alrighty. Thanks.
First, nice to meet you, Charlie and Candace.
Hey.
My question is, recently in East Palestine, or East Palestine, however you pronounce it. East Palestine? Okay. Well, recently, you know, the train derailment, and liberals aren't doing anything about it. They're not showing support to the people, but neither are conservatives. I mean, look at the Trump administration back. They deregulated Norfolk Southern. I think the corporate executives should be in prison for the rest of their lives. Same with George Bush, by the way. He lied about weapons of mass destruction. He should be in prison for the rest of his life as well. So should Obama, too. Okay. Libya now has slaves. Libya has slaves.
Yeah. So love the spirit. Love the candor. Let me challenge you, though. The specific Can I answer the question? Yeah, thank you. The specific regulation that you cited actually didn't pertain to the train derailment. I do agree. BNSF, Burlington Northern Santa Fe, which actually was not the railway. It was Georgia Pacific. Was it Georgia Pacific? It was Georgia Pacific. But BNSF does this all the time too. Was it Norfolk Southern? Norfolk Southern. They don't care about the people of East Palestine at all. So, but I wouldn't blame the Trump administration. The specific regulation they passed actually didn't pertain to that. But look, I mean, there's a reason why, and this should make everyone think deeply, why are your leaders that you send to D.C., except for J.D. Vance, who's terrific, by the way, why are your leaders so enthusiastic and so vocal and so heated about making sure Zelensky has his money and not the people of East Palestine, Ohio? When we say America first, we mean it. We mean that if water is getting poisoned or citizens have their air quality put in jeopardy, that should take a higher priority than the needs, wants, and ambitions of a border dispute 5,000 miles away. And so I find no disagreement. Do you want to?
I totally agree with you. I mean, it's atrocious what's happening. And the answer to your question, Charlie, is because they have to launder the money back to themselves. When you send it overseas, it's easier to launder back to yourselves. It is atrocious. And you won't get an argument about us from the perspective that virtually everything the federal government touches turns to trash. You know, that's just why we want to shrink government. We want to shrink power out of D.C. And there are criticisms that we could levy against the Democrats and the Republicans all day. And a lot of times it really is a uniparty. So you're absolutely correct.
Thank you. We got to get to the next question. Thank you.
So first thing I'd like to mention is that my mother and father wanted me to say hello for them because they couldn't be here and they're big fans of you.
Hi, Mom and Dad.
Yeah. But I'm the socialist they raised. So I would like to ask you a question in opposition. I'm the socialist they raised, so I'm saying I'm asking a question in opposition.
No worries. I'm glad you're here.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
Thank you. I said, how can we have relativized a love for America when we have a long history of being anti-democratic overseas, being involved in coups in Chile, Guatemala, that have been supported by both Democratic and Republican institutions?
Hold on. I am just to be clear. Yeah.
Thank you. I could tell you're a little nervous, so I'm gonna restate
the question. But thank you for being
glad you're here.
Did he say how can we?
He said, "How can we maintain love for America because of our anti-democratic foreign policy, in particular supporting coups in Chile, Latin America, around the world?" Did I summarize that pretty well.
I think this kind of ties back into the last answer that we just gave, because that does not represent America. That represents crooked politicians that are in D.C. that has us in endless wars, staging coups, the color revolution that we staged in Ukraine, which is absolutely what happened. We staged a color revolution in Ukraine to insert Zelensky because politicians are corrupt in D.C. And it is very difficult for people to differentiate, you know, what we're talking about here. Something has gone terribly wrong in America. That is a fact. This is not the America that your grandparents grew up in. That is a fact. Something happened with these globalist initiatives, them recognizing sometime after 9/11 that they can keep us in endless wars and keep sending trillions of dollars, sending our sons and daughters to go overseas. And let me be very clear. When I criticize this, we are not at all criticizing the people that went overseas and believed in our country and believed in our values and never could have fathomed that our government could be this crooked, this awful, this backwards, and doing this all for profit. But that is a circumstance. We didn't pull out of Afghanistan because Biden cares about your sons and daughters. We pulled out of Afghanistan, in my personal opinion, because they have an incredible resource. What's the one for in batteries? Not uranium. Lithium, yeah, one of the and
they need for
and
fuel.
They're going to mine it, and this is why they're pushing all of this ESG agenda. It is so much more Machiavellian, like I said, and I don't find your sentiment, what you're talking about, to be socialist at all. By the way, the question that you asked, at least, it's a major problem, and the only way that we're going to fix it is to disempower people in DC, and that is something that people on the left and the right should be agreeing and coming together on.
So, can I just ask you a quick question? So, you're a socialist that is worried about some government activity. Do you trust the government?
Not at all, no.
Then why are you a socialist?
Because I understand socialism not as that. I don't understand socialism as being pro... I distrust hierarchies, right? And I think that a socialist, what they want is that they want more democracy. You want the people to be the ones in power. Now they do say the dictatorship of
guys be nice, because he really, you know, he's trying to understand it. I would very much say that you should study what socialism actually, I know what it's sold as, I know what they bill it as, right? When I know what the bill says, it's going to be amazing, people are going to have power. You got to check in with the Venezuelans, maybe that's a starting point. Check in with the Cubans who believed in Fidel Castro. Check in over the last 100 years how many people have died because they sold them a narrative. And what really happened was the government then seized all the power from the people, promised they would redistribute it, but isn't what happened. The average Venezuelan citizen has lost something like 23 pounds. It kills every single time. So you're probably someone that has a really big heart, and you actually believe that the government has too much power. And so you believe it when people like AOC say, we're going to fight and we're going to return power to the people. That's not what they're going to do. What she's doing is she's fighting for government to grow until it becomes so insurmountable that you are rendered powerless and the individual is rendered powerless. That's what socialism actually is, not what it's billed as. But thank you so much for your question.
You.
I really
appreciate
you being here. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.
Hi, Charlie. Hi, Candace. Thanks for coming out.
Hey.
I'm sort of in opposition as well. Charlie brought up the point of neoliberalism and its impact in Ohio, particularly with the issue of, you pointed out immigration as one of one of the more prominent consequences of neoliberalism and the reforms that happened, the time period, let's say around 1990s, 2000s.
Yep, sure.
Coming up to the modern.
Bill Clinton signing in the National Immigration Act in 91, sure.
But I would say one aspect that I believe that you're missing in neoliberalism, which is fundamental to neoliberalism, is deregulation. Deregulation to multinationals, deregulation in labor protection and protections under conditions of the workers, and the extraction of resources in the third world, because most of these companies, because of these neoliberal policies, went overseas. That's where all the jobs went. They went to mostly the third world in China and Mexico. And yet what we see here is not an exact critique of that from the conservative viewpoint, because, you know, you guys put a lot of emphasis on deregulation and a lot of support towards it, despite the fact that is what's elemental to neoliberalism and the developments that happened in the last 30 years. So my question would be, from the conservative standpoint, does there have to be a reassessment of how to approach deregulation from a conservative and a capitalist perspective?
Yeah. So actually, I see it differently. I think that some of our dumb regulation actually encouraged our companies to go overseas. Is that we regulated our small and medium-sized businesses so heavily that when Deloitte showed up and they said, hey, I can make this trinket in mainland China for, you know, pennies on a dollar, and meanwhile they have to fight the EPA, the Employment Prevention Agency, and they have to fight the IRS, and they have to fight all these different government agencies, the Leviathan, the fourth branch of government, the bureaucracy, basically made the business owner's decision easier to go overseas. Did they make the right decision? Probably not. For the country, they might have made it for their bottom line. Depends on what regulation you're talking about. But remember this, don't paint too broad of a brush, because the biggest pushers of regulation in America are the companies you hate the most. Big companies are the ones that are asking for regulation. You might say, well, how is that possible? Because they can afford it. They have the tax firms. They have the in-house counsel. They have the accountants. $200 million a year to Facebook of extra regulation is nothing. But it is something to a competitor to Facebook. It is something to somebody that might want to go up against Facebook. So look, you need some regulation. It needs to be smart, not dumb. But generally, in the last 20 or 30 years, I think that we threw too much government power, too much government scrutiny, too many audits at our entrepreneurs, our small businesses, that actually made redomiciling and offshoring our jobs too easy. Thank you.
Thank you for your question.
Hi. So my question is, you guys were discussing blue collar workers and how they have a lot of wisdom, which I certainly agree with. I'm sure they do have a lot of wisdom. However, your guys' perspective more so sounded like they essentially have more wisdom or more knowledge than someone in academia. And my question is, why do you guys believe that blue collar workers and people in these laborious jobs have more knowledge than someone in academia? And is that rooted, or what? How is that factually rooted?
So I guess I would say, rather than saying wisdom, I would say that they have more real world value and currency than somebody who's writing papers trying to transform the world from a classroom. And I genuinely believe that. I believe that there is more value in learning to work with your hands. There's more value in learning how to raise productive human beings. I hate the fact that women are being sold a bill of lies and being told that we should be competing with men and wanting to run executives of, you know, Fortune 500 companies. I believe that we absolutely flourish in our feminine roles, and that the toughest job in the world is being a stay-at-home mom and raising good children. So to me, when we shifted those values and we stopped realizing that these people actually have the most value to society, in society, we watched our social decline begin. And we have essentially been within a managed social decline for the last 60 years, in my opinion.
I would add to that, anyone has to take a sociology class or anthropology class here? Yeah, have a kid. You'll learn a lot more about human beings than anything a textbook can teach you.
100% true. Experience always is going to override what you can learn in a book.
By the way, I would say you conflated two words, knowledge and wisdom. They're not right. The same thing. There's a lot of knowledge here at Ohio State University. There's not a lick of wisdom in most of these classrooms. And what is the difference? Very simple. Knowledge is practical. How do you develop a medication? How do you navigate
an airplane? Build a house.
Build a house. That's fine. Knowledge is important. Wisdom tells you whether or not you should do it. Wisdom is eternal. Wisdom does not change. Wisdom is the knowledge of things that will be true 200 years from now, and they were true 500 years before, because you're dealing with the same raw material. Human beings do not change. We are broken from nature, and it takes effort to create good people. The reason why college campuses are devoid of wisdom is because the beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your question. Next question.
Hello. You guys look wonderful tonight. My name is David.
Thank you. You look wonderful too.
Thank you. My question is, with our founding fathers being lawyers and educated men, is their academia and ideologies just as destructive as those you've discussed? Furthermore, what about Herodotus, Socrates, and Aristotle?
Well, no, they were classically educated. Like John Adams spoke fluent Hebrew. He also, the founding fathers believed the Bible was the greatest book ever to exist in the history of the world. The most cited book, secular or otherwise, was not John Locke, it was not Montesquieu, it was not David Hume, it was the book of Deuteronomy in the Federalist Papers and the documents that led up to our founding. The founding fathers, when they put the Liberty Bell, they put Leviticus 25 on it. Leviticus,
not Psalms, not Proverbs, not John, Leviticus, okay? These are serious Bible believers that understood the foundational roots of a civilization. How many college professors here would quote Leviticus to their students in a positive way? What does classically trained means? Herodotus was the founder of history. Socrates invented the classical dialogue and the idea of the pursuit of truth. Classical education believes in three things: goodness, beauty, and virtue. There's something high and we should aim for it. That we have a soul, that there's an eternal component to our existence that is more than material matter, and that we as a human being, it's going to take work and effort, but we can aim high, point high, and we can be better tomorrow than we are today. The educational manifesto today is opposite. They say you're nothing more than a combination of chemicals and matter that have accidentally combusted into where you are today through a Darwinian process, and there is no beauty, there is no goodness, there is no virtue, there is no truth. The founding fathers were proper academics. The ones today are charlatans disguised as academics.
So well said. So well said.
Hi, I'm nervous in front of two future U.S. presidents, but... I wanted to ask and hear both your point of views, especially towards Candace, but you know how they pushed the sexual liberation agenda? Sexual liberation agenda?
Liberation, yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay. What's your take on a young lady who got pregnant and the man who got her pregnant tells her to abort the baby because he doesn't care for the kid and doesn't not want to be in that kid's life? She has no family, no help, and she wants to focus on school and in her career. Is it best for her to get rid of the kid, focus on herself, and having a family later down the road? Because if she has that kid, that child's going to be a burden upon her.
Did you catch it? You want me to repeat it? I could repeat it. So I think you're... I think
giving us a scenario of somebody who's pregnant with a kid that
the
father doesn't
want it.
Was
this the Ohio situation of the young lady that went to Indiana to get the abortion, or are you just talking more generally?
Generally.
You're talking generally. Okay.
And you're saying that if the kid was born, they would be ill-advantaged. Is that what you're asking that? Your end question is, what should they do?
Yeah, what should she do? Should she just
like abortion ethics, basically, is the question.
You should absolutely choose life. It's such a scary thing to me to think... And actually, who was it that said, I think it was Ronald Reagan, you know, everybody who argues for abortion has already been born, right? Which the many examples, and this is what is so problematic about the argument of people that are pro-choice, is that it ignores all of the people that grew up in broken homes and made something of themselves. People who were adopted, people that grew up in group homes, what they were able to contribute to society. It basically says the argument that unless your life is rosy, unless you have a rosy start, then you don't have a right to life and your life is not worth living. And that could not be more wrong and more backwards. It's so wrong. I especially, you guys obviously know a lot about my upbringing. Like, my story is one that I hope serves as an example when people read it of what can happen when you triumph this idea of victimhood, when you realize that you're not a victim and that you are always in the driver's seat of your own life and you can be a victor. Everybody, by the way, has terrible things that happen in their lives. Don't believe that because you see somebody and they grew up and they're super wealthy that they don't have issues, or people that actually, I personally find that the wealthiest kids are the most effed up personally in my life, right? And it for people to not even have the opportunity to try because somebody has sentenced them to death and said your life is not worth living because you don't have a father that loves you or a mother that wants you, it deeply saddens me. It's so backwards. It is so antithetical to everything that we believe as conservatives. If you meet a conservative that says, well, I'm a little flimsy, I'm a lifestyle, they don't know what it means to be a conservative. Fundamentally, at our core is that we believe in life, right? We believe in life and the right to life. And so absolutely in every scenario, I would choose life over and over again. And let me tell you, just as someone who has had a child, your life begins. If you think in a moment while you're pregnant that it may be a burden, and you may be fearful, when you have that child, you will realize that life begins when you become a mother or a father. It is the most beautiful, wonderful chapter of anybody's life, no matter how difficult it may be.
I do not believe there's a thing as an unwanted child in America. There's a million abortions in America every single year, about 3,000 a day. And there's twice as many people than that on the adoption waiting list. So if every single person who had an abortion had that baby and put them up for adoption, they could all be put up and adopted twice over in America. There's no such thing as an unwanted child in America. Thank you.
Hey.
Hi. So I have a disagreement with your guys' take in Ukraine. As I understand it, your position is that, you know, it's really expensive. We shouldn't be sending all this money, and it's also none of our business, right? I disagree with that because, one, I think it's morally right, but also even from a national interest standpoint, right? That money, you know, Ukrainians have definitely done a lot, but that money has helped them embarrass Russia on a national stage, right? Like before, we believed that they were a big power, and now they've embarrassed themselves. And also, I think that Western solidarity is really important, right? I mean, like, especially with China eyeing Taiwan, we need to show them internationally that we're a solidified force. We can't they can't just go and take it. We need to show that we can defend.
So we're spending trillions of dollars to embarrass Russia? That's a little bit of embarrassment. Is that what we're trying to do? You think that we should be recycling millions of dollars and having millions of dollars disappear into thin air so that we can say, ooh, look, Vladimir Putin is embarrassed. And if by embarrassed, you mean shaking hands with Xi Jinping, talking about how things are going to change and that the next 100 years are not going to look like the last 100 years, then you are not paying attention to what is going on. We have just pushed Vladimir Putin into the arms of China, right? One of our greatest, the greatest competitor that we possible have is China. They're shaking hands. They're openly mocking the West. This has never happened before, right? They think the West is a joke. And why shouldn't they? Look at us. We're having debates about gender. We don't know what a woman is, okay? Hollywood, we think that it's cool to have Zelensky make attendances at the Grammys. It's a joke. It's a complete and utter joke. So no, first and foremost, we talked about national interest. National interests require that it was in our nation or it impacted us. It's not my effing business what happens in the Eastern Corridor while we have real Americans that are suffering today. And if you notice, it's been nonstop wars that we haven't lost. Do you want to talk about embarrassment? Try leaving billions of dollars of technology in Afghanistan after spending decades fighting. That's embarrassment. That's embarrassment. What's embarrassing is China then flying immediately after we magically evacuate and meeting with the Taliban and immediately recognizing them as a government. We had daughters and our sons that died. What did we win? What about those weapons of mass destruction? Was this the 20th anniversary of Iraq? You want to talk about embarrassment? The things that we did in Iraq, the things that we've done all across the world, and for what? What do you have to show for it? Well, I guess we embarrassed a few people while we had people, we were sending Americans over to die. At least we were able to embarrass a few people in the process. That's not a good way to think. I'm going to tell you right now, that's not a good way to think. We should think about prioritizing all of the issues that we have in America. You want to talk about an invasion? Let's talk about the one that's happening at our border every single day. That's what we mean when we say America first, okay? We have plenty of issues to solve. Not a single red cent should be sent overseas until we fix what's happening here in the United States. Thank you for your question.
I'll add one thing. Just Candace makes a fabulous point that needs to be repeated and repeated. A country that cannot determine what a woman is should not go to war.
How embarrassing. How embarrassing.
No, this is a general rule for conflict. If you have a domestic crisis where you are not able to agree on basic truths, you are not a nation ready to go through.
China's writing articles, their newspapers, they're literally writing articles mocking America about how we don't know what bathroom to go into, right? About how we sent the full force of the military to shoot down a Hobby Lobby balloon. Right? If you think that the embarrassment that Russia is embarrassed, you haven't been paying attention to what's happening in America. Honestly, we're being mocked in the Eastern Corridor.
And I'll go even a step further. It's a tragic geopolitical mistake that Russia is not neutral, if not an ally, with us against the Chinese Communist Party. All this saber rattling that, you know, it's the Cold War and Russia against us. It didn't have to be this way. Donald Trump.
Cold War hangover. It's Cold War hangover.
Donald Trump had it in the right position. The Chinese Communist Party is the great threat against the West and American liberty. And now they have a gas station. The Chinese Communist Party now has more oil reserves than they know what to do with in a great super alliance that we helped create.
Please study the pipelines. Really understand. It's really understand. This is not about scoring points. This is not about running an article on CNN and Washington Post saying, oh, look, we embarrassed. You need to study the map of the pipelines and understand exactly what he is talking about when he is saying the threat of an alliance between Russia and China. They don't care about some points on the board saying, oh, look, it's so serious. We are in such a severe state right now. When I say it is managed social decline, managed political decline, we are no longer being taken seriously on the world stage. When I watched, I think it was Russia Today, a clip that my executive producers pulled of them openly laughing and mocking the American military, unfathomable even 4 years ago when Trump was in office. Unfathomable. They're openly mocking us. They don't take the West seriously because why should we be taking seriously? We're arguing over bathroom signs over here.
Thank you. Got to get to the next question. Thanks for being here.
Oh my, it's like a very scary thing that's happening. I don't think people understand the significance of what's happening in the Eastern Corridor right now.
Yep. All of them.
Oh yeah, he's so not aligned with Western principles. Everything he's doing, locking up his political opponents, that's something that he definitely did.
He did shut down the Russian Orthodox Church, not all the churches. Okay, we'll get to a question here.
Hi, this is directed more towards Candace than anyone. I've heard a lot about you, haven't really went to an event like this in general. I get the point that you're not really well-liked specifically with the Black community, but one thing I wanted to address was growing up, socially, a lot of Black people around me at least were conservative. They went to church every Sunday. They were very religious. They weren't a biggest fan of LGBT. That's just how they were. Mm-hmm. What do you think is stopping them from being in this room?
Culture. That's the truth. Black America has faced a full cultural decline before everybody else. I actually believe that the government experimented first with Black Americans, LBJ and the Great Society Act, to see how they could completely obliterate the Black family and make the Black family worship not God. We used to be at the center of all families in America and is no longer at, but worship government and more governance. Welfareism destroyed Black America and it created the toxic culture that we see today. Every single ill that Black America is facing, they are facing because we went from a 22% single motherhood rate back in 1964 to today, the single motherhood rate being 73%. We don't have our families together. More than 73% of Black Americans are growing up without a father in the home. So you could just imagine what that does when I say that every social ill follows, the incarceration rates, the incriminality rates. And what happens, by the way, is that when you remove that family unit, it's not like they just go, okay, no family. It becomes an empty space and they fill that void with something else, and that something else for Black America has been a toxic culture. They turn to rappers, they turn to the streets, they pursue that paternity and that maternity elsewhere. And this is the huge epidemic that we're facing today. It is the reason why they believe that they have to be Democrats is because Hollywood insists upon being a Democrat. You're not allowed to be an open conservative in Hollywood. Well, if Hollywood and what's on the TV is raising you, then that's the only option you've ever been presented with. You couple that with the other pillar, which is the education system, also decisively Democrat, decisively left-leaning, specifically because their initiative is to further marry you to government. The Department of Education was created in the 1970s and with the explicit goal to make sure that people that are growing up under the Department of Education, all of us, believe that governance can deliver us from everything, and it's working. So they destroyed the family, they attacked culture, and then they went toward the educational pillar, and that is the predicament that you see across Black Americans. I try to fight all of those pillars in every single capacity, and the easiest way to fight the cultural one is to simply say on a stage every single day that Black people don't have to be Democrats. So that's it. You know, give another option.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your respectful question.
And join Blexit, Blexit.com.
There we go. Blexit.com, powered by Turning Point USA.
Beautiful. Next question.
Hello. Thank you for both being here. I'm coming to you as a wife, an entrepreneur, but most importantly, a mother. My younger elementary school son came back from school last year about a book that he read in the public library about how a boy could be a girl, like a colorful child book. And I'm getting emotional over it because as a mother, how do you combat this, or how do you look at your son and explain to him these huge moments when your 6-year-old and 5-year-old is looking at you asking all these questions, like mother to mother? I guess I'm just coming for advice at this point.
Well, mother to mother, I can't wait till my child is of the school age because I'm going to raise hell. I hear these things and I get excited. I get excited when I hear these things. I really do. Try it on my kids. I mean, people don't understand. When I say that I'm a mother bear, try it on my kids. If you want to watch me breathe actual fire from my mouth, try it on my kids. And that is the attitude that every single mother needs to have. We need to adopt the attitude of recognizing this was ever intentional by design to remove parents, remove mothers from being the CEO of their homes, transferring them to the workforce so that the government, the Department of Education, could raise your children and indoctrinate them. The only way that you're going to reverse that is to fight it head on. They were scared. When mothers began showing up at school board meetings, they didn't know what to do, right? They had never seen it before. Mothers didn't go to school board meetings. What do you mean moms have to work a 9-to-5 job like dad? They don't like that we're starting to pay attention. I quite literally, oh my goodness, when my kids go to school, I'm going to be in that principal's office so much. I'm like, what are we wearing today? What are we wearing for school? Because I'm not going to let it fly a single moment. Again, this is when I am calling upon mothers to act like Karens. If it is up to us. Women become the CIA, the FBI. Let you want to find one detail about a guy on Instagram. You know how it is, girls. We'll be like, actually, his sister likes to golf. We need to employ those skills of uniquely set of skills that women have, and we need to give them to our children, and we need to use them to exercise dominion over our children. We're fighting right now a custody battle over our children with the state every single day. So you need to not get upset. You need to channel that upset, and you need to make sure that you affect change. Become problematic for that school in saying that I'm not going to allow this to slide. I'm going to make sure that this is okay. I'm going to network with other parents, and I'm going to raise hell until this situation changes. It must change, and I think it's going to begin to change. So I'm starting to see mothers realize what's actually happening.
Thank you. We got to get to the next question. Thank you.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Hi.
First and foremost, I'd like to say I'd love to meet you guys again later down the line because I'm nervous. I got to go to the bathroom. but
always makes it worse, you know?
Right. I always make liberals' heads explode. And I'm about to make conservatives' heads explode because I'm a gay Christian, you know? And I'd love to debate you guys one day about that. But why I could never be a liberal is because I can never support a socialist and Marxist agenda that's happening in our country. And so my question is, looking upon the midterms, looking upon, you know, Republicans should have really steamrolled Sleepy Joe and his horrible agenda. But in my opinion, we didn't do that. So in your guys' opinion, I would like to say, how do you think Republicans and conservatives should message to a younger base, younger voters, and try to show them the evils of what socialism and Marxism truly is? Thank you.
I don't want to debate you, but I want to encourage you. Because you believe in Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior, right? Okay. So regardless of your own personal desires or activities, I encourage you not to put the word gay in front of Christian. Just say you're a Christian.
Okay.
It's actually not totally relevant. Now, you might say that you're engaging in certain behaviors or activities. Let me tell you why. Because I actually think it compromises what Christianity is and should be. So you might be engaging in a certain lifestyle that I don't think is biblically based, but I wouldn't combine those two words together. Okay? Let me just say that. I would encourage you to stop doing that. Okay? Second thing. As far as how do we prevent people from Marxism and all that other stuff, Candace, do you have a thought on that?
I'm sorry. No, I don't remember the question because I was listening to you.
Yeah.
What was the tail end of your question?
I know it's a lot.
I know you gotta pee.
Handle.
I know. He's like, I gotta pee.
I'm fine standing alone.
No, you're fine. I'm glad that you're here today.
That's
really
why
am.
I would love to debate you guys again. Another.
Not
day.
Here to debate. I'm just encouraging you not to use those two words.
But what was the actual end of that question? Do we have a couple more questions?
Republicans did not do well in the midterms. Mm-hmm. I think we could all agree. And from the last 2 years, since Joe Biden's gotten into office, it's been disaster after disaster after disaster. Republicans should have steamrolled Joe Biden and his horrible Congress in the midterms. That did not happen. It's clear that the messaging from the Republican base is not working, especially with young voters. How can they do that to change it around?
Yeah, and so not to answer it politically, because we want to try to stay away from just R versus D stuff, but more generally this. Look, young people need to be given a promise by three things from their leaders, okay? Make it easier to get married, have kids, and buy property. Those three things are currently out of grasp for most young people in America. Conservatives running for office, conservatives in public life, should say the new social contract is very simple. We want to be able to make it not just easy, but popular to get married, easy to have children, and we want everyone to be able to own a home the same way your parents did. That is out of grasp, and it's creating revolution. revolutionaries. It's creating cynicism. It's creating disconnectedness from the actual established political order. I think that's one good way to start. And I'm a contrarian. I think that the more we lean into these issues, the more that we actually push back against the left, the more we're going to win people over. I think that it's people that run for the hills and are afraid to engage on the trans issue and the abortion issue and the border issue. I think people want clarity, not pandering. They want courage, not cowardice. And we need also to have candidates that run for office that understand how to communicate these issues and these values and these ideas. And finally, I think it's pretty popular with younger voters to say that we're going to put you first, not the needs, wants, or interests of foreign citizens coming in to come take your jobs or send money overseas to Ukraine. Thank you.
Thanks so much for your question. Last but not least.
Hi, this is more for Candace. I've been listening to you and Ben Shapiro specifically for at least 3 years, and you guys have inspired me and just really enlightened me about a lot of things, and that segues me into my question. I am actually a sophomore in high school.
And wow, so first off, a round of applause here. That is epic. Wow. I think you just made my night. That's very encouraging.
Thank you. I'm in the thicket of the indoctrination, and I see it firsthand. And a lot of times people talk about what is happening and what they're saying. But I guess my question to you is, how would you combat them?
So it's very tricky. You know, we get tons of requests and people are always like, oh, there needs to be a turning point president in high school. There can't be a turning point presence really fully in high school or Blexit president in high school because high schools, unfortunately, minors are in high school, which brings me to the answer to your question. I think it is so important for parents to be in lockstep. And this goes back to my question about me answering and saying that I'm going to be at this high school every single day, at the middle school every single day. I think students like you really need to have the backing of their parents to know that they can push back against educators in a respectful way. You know, you don't need to raise hell as a student because you also don't want to make yourself. I get emails all the time from students that are in high school, you know, that say, I said your name during Black History Month, and my teacher said that they wouldn't put it on the board and things of that nature. And when that sort of thing happens, I actually get involved. When I get these emails, I will email the administration. I will email with their parents because their parents are on the emails, and I get involved. I actually think that it's almost more impactful when you're younger to call out that indoctrination and to call it out in a powerful way and to speak to an administrator, because that administrator is going to have that fear that a minor is uncomfortable with the way that something is happening in the school system, right? And that's a healthy fear for them to have, right? You don't want to have a bunch of minors saying that they are feeling discriminated against. So I would use that to your potential. I would speak with the administration. I would raise flags on teachers and do this completely in lockstep with your parents. I hope that your parents support you. I'm assuming that they do. Do this in lockstep with your parents because they'll be able to take it further if the issue does need to be elevated. Your parents will be able to take it further than you do. And look, you have a remarkable head start in life. It is so hard, the indoctrination that you're going to go through. But I can tell you that you obviously have a very good head on your shoulders. And when you get into college, look around. You are going to have so many people, an entire community that you can fight with just as hard. So, you know, give it time and know that you are exactly doing the right thing, the most that you can right now. It was so nice to meet you.
And start a Turning Point chapter at your local high school. Huh? No, we have more high school chapters than college chapters.
No way.
At Turning Point USA now.
Wow,
yeah,
that's awesome.
The high school department.
But we never speak in high schools because it's hard.
It's a little bit harder.
Yeah, it's a little tricky.
You got to deal with a lot of administration and the thicket there. Couple closing thoughts, everybody. Candace first, any closing thoughts?
No, you know, just to encourage you to make sure that you never get trodden down, that you never think that it's all doom and gloom. It isn't. I know that we are in a tough spot in America. I recognize that. And these issues that we're talking about, as I said, are unfathomable. But when I say to you that I wake up every single morning optimistic because I realize how angry the left has become, which lets me know that we are closer to our goal and that we are actually seeing a cultural shift, that we are taking down the false idols that are talking about extensively in the Bible, why idolatry in Hollywood. Hollywood is not in the Bible, but we talk about false idols and idolatry and why it's wrong. We are seeing the collapse of that. And so when we ever do an event, I always want people to walk out and I want them to feel optimistic that wholesomeness is making a return, that holiness is making a return, and that it's thanks to all the people in this room. And I feel remarkably blessed that I've been able to do what I've been doing for the last 7 years. And it's thanks to every single person in this room that has supported me. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you for allowing me to do what I love and what I believe in.
Really quick, Get involved. Danny, you're doing a great job. The Turning Point USA chapter here at OSU.
Yeah.
I have a subscribe to both Candace and I's podcast. You can check out your podcast app, take out your phone and subscribe. We're selling books for a donation of any amount outside if you guys want to do that. I have a personal request, a very important personal request for all of you. Can you please beat Michigan next year? What is this all about? Okay. And there's this one last thing we have to do, which is OH. God bless you guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you guys.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.